welcome to another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. I'm your host, Pastor Dave Carl, from the Stonebriar Community Church in Frisco, Texas. Today, I've invited, well, he's a regular on this podcast, my friend and the pastor of our student ministries here at Stonebriar, Nathan Kosurek.
Hi, Dave.
Thank you for getting up early this afternoon in order to participate.
I even put on pants for this.
I'm so glad to hear that. And just don't aim your... We're recording this via a device. We're not in the same room like we usually are.
I'm glad you
said that. So if you hear some buzzing, it's because of probably Nathan's cheap modem or whatever. Whatever might go down there. Well, today we want to talk about helping your kids deal with disappointment and loss. And I don't know what y'all have been experiencing at y'all's homes, but we have had a fair bit of that going on in the North Texas area. And just because we're all humans and we're alive, I can certainly promise you there will be more disappointment and loss in the future. How's that for a happy way to kick off a discussion? But our contention here is that this is a thing that you could get good at, get better at. It just sounds like, well, that's going to be a whooping. How do we, you know, numb the pain? But I would suggest this is something we could learn about, get better at, and not be so afraid of it happening again in the future. And that would be good for everybody involved.
Yeah, I noticed that fear is a key part of why we seem to be really bad at dealing with disappointment, whether it's just major loss or, you know, you didn't get the dinner that you were hoping to deal with, that you were going to get that day. Yeah, fear, because we don't really want to think about so many of the things that hurt, right?
Yes, and it's I think, and we've said disappointment and loss, but I think there probably is some difference between the two. And we haven't talked about this, but would you concur? Are they the same thing at different degrees, or are they somehow different?
Yeah, I'm inclined to think of them as the same thing, different degrees, perhaps. I think that even in a small way, not getting what you hope to eat for dinner, you could say is a loss. But the way we use the word typically when we are having these conversations, what we mean is a significant loss. And when we use the word disappointment, we probably mean a less significant loss.
That's, you know, I don't have any science to back this up right now, but that feels like a thing that we can agree on, at least for this discussion.
Yeah.
There are levels, and I'm making this definition up on the fly, but I would think of a loss as something that you cannot get back.
Yeah.
A disappointment is, this was saddening. It's possible it could come back around, you know, a meal. I could have it returned, or the next time I come back, I'll order differently. But a loss is, it's gone.
Yeah.
Either that opportunity, that relationship, that person is gone. So I think it's a more profound experience to have a loss than a disappointment. Though we can be bad at this enough that disappointments could bring us to our knees, and they shouldn't. And if I'm experiencing a lot of pain and anguish from disappointments, I'm afraid to go out of the house now.
Yeah. You know, this is the question in my mind that I've been turning over and over, and it reminds me of a 12th grader that I had the opportunity to be his youth pastor from middle school all the way up through high school. And this is back in California, and he's a great kid, involved in everything, mission trips, serving at church, always there. Had never had a girlfriend until 12th grade. And then felt like he met the love of his life. And right. Then 9 weeks later, she suddenly, unexpectedly broke it off. Well, that's a pretty typical experience for a lot of kids growing up in middle school or high school. You know, you maybe have a boyfriend or a girlfriend for 9 weeks and it doesn't work out. It's not a big shock or surprise to anyone. But for him, he took it as a significant loss. You know, we might say that's a disappointment. It didn't work out the way you'd hoped, but there's other fish in the sea. Well, it began to just snowball on him. It was experienced as a significant loss. And so the question, and maybe you had already had in mind to bring this up, and I'll be interested to hear what you think about it, but from the standpoint of someone who's trying to help another person deal with disappointment, or even what we're saying as a significant loss. On the one hand, I feel like we can make the mistake of minimizing it or telling them, hey, that's just a disappointment, get over it. There's gonna be a lot of disappointment, right? On the other hand, if we maybe indulge it so much that it keeps them stuck in a place where they see themselves as a perpetual victim of this circumstance that they can never get up off the ground, that's not good either. So that's sort of my question in the role of a parent, and we see our kids dealing with something, or even in the role of a friend or a relative, anytime we have someone in our lives who's going through a difficult time of disappointment or loss, where do we fall on that scale, on that spectrum? Do we wait for a season and then tell them, okay, enough's enough? I mean, I don't want to decide for someone how long they get to grieve a loss, you know, and I don't want to decide how significant that loss is to them if it's just a disappointment. You know what I mean?
Well, and I absolutely, I do. And I think that's a great example, because, I mean, parents have created phrases that in the most kind of humorous, even comical way, are designed to shame that child into not bothering me anymore about this.
So that's inconvenient to deal with your pain.
that's puppy love. There's more fish in the sea, you know, there's which means what you're feeling is dumb. And stop it. Right. Which I think categorically the two of us could agree that's bad.
Very bad. Yeah, very bad.
You don't want to shame somebody for what they're feeling.
No, it hurts them worse.
They are feeling that. And if you're a 12th grade kid who's never had a girlfriend before, this is the worst loss he's experienced, perhaps.
No doubt. Way worse than he could have ever imagined it was going to be.
And from a parenting or a friend, mentor perspective, if you want to communicate to this kid, don't ever come to me with anything again. The perfect thing to say is, this is such a small thing. This is puppy love. This is, you're going to be over this before you know it. Let's go see a movie or talk about something else. I mean, they're not going to come back to you next week.
No, you set up a dangerous pattern. Yeah, you set up a dangerous pattern. And now whenever they're dealing with something significant and you're wondering why they're not coming to you and talking to you about it, this is why.
You have clearly communicated, I'm not open for business on things that I don't feel are worthy of my time, irrespective of how that affects you. And most parents would never want to communicate that, but I've done it. I think, you know, if you're tired or, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to not lose my job or my business or the car's smoking in the front curb and I got to take it. Really? I'm going to talk. I have to stop everything to talk about.
And even if I do have time and I want to try to help, I can just force a perspective on them that they're not ready for. I think that this is the hard part for me, Dave. I'm really trying to think this through because I feel like as a parent, I would want to give perspective and the benefit of life experience to my child as they're going through perhaps the first major disappointment they've ever had to go through. But at the same time, in attempting to give that perspective, I can accidentally minimize the pain that they're going through.
Yeah.
It's a very tricky little, you know, tightrope.
Yeah, and most important things, most things that are important in life, you can do them badly on either end of the spectrum. Right. So, and I have seen a family, as they operated, they were so involved emotionally with their kids' emotions. They empathized so much that they would stay home from school, if they were too upset.
And I can't.
Because they just...
Yeah. I can't tell you the examples I've seen, Dave. I can't tell you how many just crazy stories I can tell you about things that loving parents will do to try to help, you know, meaning well.
Yes. And we unavoidably are training our kids. Well, we're training our kids no matter what we do. I don't think we can not be training our kids. Even if we're not with them, there's some training going on there.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
If I were to rush in and somebody broke up with my daughter and I'm going to go to the parents of that boy and I'm going to rain down fire because he broke my daughter's heart and I might feel like I'm being a super duper parent because I love my daughter so much and I'm going to care for her in every conceivable way that I can, and I'm not going to let some gorilla of a kid... What am I training my daughter?
Yeah.
In that act that nobody should ever make you feel bad going forward.
Yeah, that's right. I think the goal.
You're not capable of handling it.
That's right. You're saying the exact opposite thing that you want to say, because your goal as a parent is to equip them for the next crisis.
That so if, should if you, be the goal.
If that is the goal, that right, that we should have, then we're working against our own goal if we, if we make it too easy, or if we solve the problem for them, or if we minimize it and tell them that's not a real crisis, then we've really wasted a good crisis that we could have really worked through together and done some training and equipping there.
Well, I think it's an important point that you just blew past because you was kind of assumed, I think everybody was thinking what you're thinking, but what's the goal? The goal is not to make my kid never feel discomfort.
Yeah,
that right. could be a goal. But the better goal is I want my kid to be able to take hits in the future, get up on their own, and continue to function.
Absolutely. That has to be the goal, because
that would be a much better goal.
Not gonna be with them. Our goal is not to keep them in our house indefinitely.
So I think that's an important point. What is the goal when I'm dealing with anybody and myself? It's not like I'm past all of this myself. When I'm feeling disappointment, or I'm with someone who has experienced genuine loss, what is my goal? It could be I'm getting triggered and I'm so uncomfortable. I just need my friend to stop feeling bad, and I will do anything to make them not feel bad, because that will help me feel better. That is all the technical, I believe the Old Testament term for that is, that's all jacked up.
Yeah, that's the Hebrew.
Yeah. So that's a bad goal. I'm so uncomfortable. I need you to feel good so that I will feel good. That would be a very self-unaware response that I've done. We can all do, but that would be a bad strategy.
And I like how you said oftentimes it's just second nature. You use the word trigger, and we don't even realize some of those patterns that we have adopted from our own upbringing and the way our own parents took care of us or didn't take care of us emotionally. And so if our parents reacted in some knee-jerk way to us, we don't even realize how we do the same thing, simply because we think we're being like a strong dad or some idea of what we're supposed to be as a parent, because we're just basically copying what we saw in our own upbringing.
Yes. I think there are strategies that we know that we have, and there are strategies that we just have, and we haven't even given them a name yet. But loss is unavoidable in life.
Yeah.
And it doesn't need to be exclusively a negative.
You know, one of my favorite examples of bad parenting in a movie comes from the great animated film Bambi.
Yes. And
you remember the opening scene, there's a fire. And Bambi is with his mom, and spoiler alert, she doesn't make it. Mm-hmm. And maybe this wasn't the opening scene, but it's been a while, Dave. The point is that there's a fire.
It was later in the film, I think.
Okay, yes, thanks. Yes.
Fire. Big fire.
You remember the big fire? And Dad shows up, right? I mean, this is so classic. And what does Dad say? Well, in Bambi's dad's defense, it was a crisis situation, so I don't want to be too hard on him. But what he says is, get up, Bambi. Get up. Right? And sometimes that's the extent of especially a son's relationship with his dad when it comes to handling emotional disappointment and crisis.
Yeah.
So just to underscore your point,
and he doesn't make
these
it out
are
of
some
the movie
of the
either.
No, sorry, it's not so funny. So
if you've never seen Bambi, it's just there's loss.
What there. A horrible film! Although it's a great illustration of falling in love, I do like that part of it.
but yeah, it would be, I think, informative for each of us to think, when I'm dealing with loss or my kids are, what is my strategy? What is my chief goal? Is it so that they don't feel it? Because then you're going to make a bunch of decisions. If it's, I don't want to feel what they're feeling, I will make a bunch of decisions.
Right.
But if it's, they're going to be experiencing this for the rest of their lives, I don't want them to be paralyzed in fear of the next loss, then how would I proceed? And those would be very different. So we both listened to a podcast today of smart people. And David Kessler worked with, so Elizabeth Kubler-Ross back in the 60s came up with the five stages of, originally it was dying. It's been used in grief. And she worked with David Kessler in the later part of her life. And he was doing a podcast. He's extended the five stages to six stages. And as he was describing in this podcast with Brené Brown, of whom I am a great fan of, she is not a believer. She has positions and has people who have positions on her podcasts that I strongly disagree with. But I love how she approaches many, many things. So I'm a big fan of hers. The breakthrough thing for David Kessler was he realized that there was a lack of meaning in the loss that a lot of people are experiencing, and it was debilitating for them.
The final stage was acceptance, yeah. And then he was saying there's another stage after acceptance.
Yes, and to be fair to that model, it's not a you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 and then you're done. You swirl back and forth. You go 2 2 2 2 2 4 2 2 1. It's water. It's finger painting. It's not drawing a graph. But in the midst of all of that, a thing that can be missing that will keep you disrupted is this makes no sense. There's no purpose. This was just a loss. This was just a death. And it's all bad. And I can't recover.
Right.
And his contention is finding meaning is extremely important.
And not the reason for the death or the tragedy, not creating that kind of meaning, like why did my mother die? It's more like finding, how did he put it? The meaningful moments, right? Yeah. Maybe we might call it things that we've learned or things we're grateful for. How does he put it?
Well, and there's the opportunity to find meaning and make meaning after the event. So a chaotic car crash that, you know, makes no sense. And you don't try to get meaning out of that.
Yeah.
The meaning is because that person is now gone from my life, I am going to make sure that all of my friends wear seatbelts or never drink and drive again. Good things can come from it. So yeah. I'm giving meaning afterwards that redeems that event after the fact. Now that's from a purely secular perspective. I think that's brilliant.
Sure.
But those of us who are believers, who are disciples of Jesus Christ, we don't have to do that on our own.
Yeah, I remember maybe 15 years ago, I had a close relative who lost a child to cancer. And part of the grief process that he went through was a toxic guilt that he began to accept because of his own past failures and indiscretions, just moral mistakes, and began to struggle with the idea that maybe God was punishing him by taking the life of his little girl, something like the King David with Bathsheba and the murder of Uriah, that whole scene. And so I walked him through a lot of the same kind of stuff that's not how God operates in our lives. You know, we are in a fallen world where tragedy and disaster and heartbreak and disease and death occurs. And yes, I suppose you could make a theological argument in favor of the sovereignty of God, and nothing that happens without his involvement. I think that's a separate conversation, and it's not even helpful when we're
Not at
having
the time.
conversations with people about their loss. Yeah, for sure.
But even your friend or relative's desire to find a pattern,
Yeah.
because the chaos is so distressing, we are prone to find a pattern that doesn't exist. If I had not sinned in high school,
Yeah.
then this would not have happened. Or if I had left 10 minutes early or late, or and be, because it's so distressing that there is chaotic, meaningless losses that occurred, let alone and in the future. But
Yeah.
if you fall into that, you'll never leave your house, you'll never drive a car, you'll never have a relationship. So we do not want to train our kids to find themselves in situations where there is no risk of loss or disappointment, and then they will be better off. That is a terrible existence.
And when Kessler is talking about that sixth stage and identifying meaning, yeah, he's definitely not saying the process involves constructing some reason for why the tragedy happened.
Yes. It's I'm wanting this to be redeemed, and God wants it to be redeemed. And if I cooperate with him, I can take a hit, be absolutely wobbly after it, and go through the five stages and cycle through them several times. That's good grieving. And we want people to do that. We want them to feel badly. If they've experienced a bad thing, it would be terrible to tell them, well, that's not bad enough to feel bad about. Get over it. And David Kessler would say the worst loss is your loss. Like, the worst thing that happened to me is really, really bad for me.
I think it's really significant when he said that.
Well, I'm going to stop us here for today. Nathan and I will come back next time to wrap up our discussion on how to help your kid through disappointment and loss, part two. Thanks for being with us, and remember, don't do life and don't do parenting alone.